This is Bill Monroe inviting you to meet the press with the chairman and the vice chairman of the Democratic Charter Commission.
Meet the Press, America's press conference of the air and the world's oldest network television program, is a public affairs presentation of NBC News.
Meet the Press is brought to you by Exxon.
While you've been getting ready for colder weather, the people at Exxon have been doing what they do every year to help keep you warm. We began our preparations this past summer by making and storing heating oil. Right now at our refineries, we're increasing heating oil production about 20% above what we were making during the summer. We can do this because part of our crude could be made into either heating oil or gasoline. We're also importing heating oil from foreign refineries. These imports will provide about 10% of Exxon supplies through the winter. Finally, we're adding storage capacity, switching tanks from gasoline and leasing other tanks. Our inventories, plus what we're refining and importing, should see us through the colder months. Our forecast would change if crude oil supplies were interrupted, and of course it's still important to conserve oil. But for now, our heating oil production is on schedule. We thought you'd want to see what the people of Exxon are doing to help you stay warm this winter.
Our guests today on Meet the Press are the chairman and the vice chairman of the Democratic Charter Commission, Terry Sanford, former governor of North Carolina, now president of Duke University, and Yvonne Braithwaite Burke of California, member of the House of Representatives, who was vice chairman of the 1972 Democratic National Convention. The Charter Commission was set up by the 72 Democratic Convention to draft a charter or constitution for the Democratic Party, the first in its history. The proposed charter will be voted on this week by the Democratic Midterm Convention meeting in Kansas City. We'll have the first questions now from Douglas Kiker of NBC News.
Governor Sanford, when the Democrats sit down to vote on this charter next weekend, there's a lot of speculation that it's going to produce a big fight between party regulars and party liberals over the question of delegate quotas for minority groups. Is there going to be such a fight? Now, you're head of the Charter Commission, and when you tried to come to terms with this controversial article, the blacks on your committee got up and walked out. There's a lot of speculation that the same thing could happen when the full party meets.
I don't think so. I think we already have come to a reasonable determination of what that article should be. A matter that was overlooked at Kansas City when the Willie Brown and others walked out was that a great many walked out, but not in anger, simply in order to deny a quorum so that we wouldn't destroy the rest of the charter. So it wasn't the same kind of walkout you usually think of. Now, we have already decided how quotas will be left out, how affirmative action will substitute for it, and all of that is in the call for the 1976 convention. We're now trying to agree on the language for what it will be after the 76 convention, and I think as people realize that, we can come close to the language of the call. And that's what the governors voted on, and I think that will be it. I think we're going to prove that we have brought together the two different forces and that we will have a consensus article that will be acceptable to most.
Mrs. Burke, I think it's fair to identify you as one of the Democratic liberals. As I understand this Article 10, it calls for, as the governor says, affirmative action to be taken so that each state will assure that proper representation of minority groups and delegates. But the word quota is not used as such. Are you satisfied with this wording?
I probably would have liked to see some guidelines. But the quota issue had been settled a long time before. And that's probably the reason that many of us were very concerned in Kansas City. We had arrived at a compromise and we had agreed that quotas should not be allowed. And the Article 10 that was presented in August in Kansas eliminated quotas. We had settled all of that. And we were frankly very surprised when a group of people decided that they would attack affirmative action.
Thank you very much. We'll be back to introduce our other panel members and continue the questions in just a minute. But first, this message from our alternate sponsor.
Last April, James Jonas was driving his new Buick across Veterans Bridge, Bay City, Michigan, when a pickup truck smashed into him head-on. Combined speed, about 100 miles an hour.
Nothing much happened to me. My wife, she got hurt some, but nothing serious. The guys in the truck got hurt real bad.
I'm Ed Reimers for Allstate, and here are the Jonases. Well, they bought that first Buick, the one in the wreck. They got it factory equipped with airbags. That decision may have saved their lives. Here's how the airbag works. In frontal crashes, today's airbag system is designed to automatically inflate in a split second, protect, and then deflate. The airbag protects the driver and front seat passenger automatically. That's why Allstate hopes all new cars will have airbags as standard equipment soon.
The day after the accident, I went down to the dealer and ordered the very same car, and I made very sure it had the airbags on it. I know they work because they did for us.
Now, back to Meet the Press, an unrehearsed press conference. Here's our moderator, Bill Monroe.
We're ready now to resume our interview on Meet the Press. Our guests are Terry Sanford, chairman of the Democratic Charter Commission, and Representative Yvonne Braithwaite Burke, vice chairman of the commission. You've just met Douglas Kiker of NBC News. The other questioners on our panel today are David S. Broder of the Washington Post, Mary Ann Means of King Features Syndicate, and Carl T. Rowan of the Chicago Daily News. Clarence E. Spivak, regular member of the Meet the Press panel, will be back next week. We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Broder.
Governor Sanford, some people feel that in trying to damp down the controversy that might have erupted in Kansas City, you've written a charter that doesn't do much more than ratify the status quo in the Democratic Party. Does this make any basic changes in the Democratic Party?
I think it does a number of things that haven't been done before. I think it, first of all, incorporates most of the reforms that have come from 64 and 68 and 72. It establishes firmly, and it establishes in writing, that this will be an open party, a party that is based on affirmative action, a party that's based on reaching out for more members and reaching out for groups that traditionally have been left out of the political process at the party level. So it does that, and that's a remarkable achievement, it seems to me. It also does some other things. It establishes pretty firmly that this is based on the concept of federalism, strength within a central strength. And it may very well be that the Democratic Party understands better than the government what federalism is. I think it establishes that principle in a very sound way that will well serve the party and well serve the nation. In addition to that, it establishes a matter that you might have assumed was already established, but it hasn't been, and that is that this party stands for something. It stands for issues. It's not afraid to talk about issues, and we firmly put that in the charter. So at least those new thrusts, those major three thrusts, are in the charter, along with a great many other improvements. So I think it does a great deal. I think it's a document that looks forward, and I think it will create the kind of a party and help shape the kind of party that will help restore confidence in the party system.
Do you think this is enough of a response to bring people back to the Democratic Party in a time when we know people are turning away from the political parties and saying that we don't want to identify with a political party, we want to be independents?
I saw this as one of the major reasons for having a charter. It gives us a focal point. It gives us an objective that we can get together on. We can show how a Democratic Party, how the Democratic Party can pull itself together in a way that does look to the future. I hope it will have the effect of restoring confidence in the two-party system, along with restoring confidence in the Democratic Party.
Ms. Means?
Mrs. Burke, isn't the phrase affirmative action essentially meaningless without some sort of firm standard by which to test whether delegations are discriminatory or not?
Yes. The word affirmative action means very little. And that's one reason why we've been very concerned to have language that would say that it would take into consideration different elements within the Democratic Party and making sure that they would be included. Now, a program of affirmative action would be submitted by each state, and hopefully the bylaws would have sufficient guidelines to make sure that that affirmative action brings into the party, or rather guarantees, participation by women, by minorities, by senior citizens, and also by some of the people who've been excluded. I think that some of the party regulars need to be guarantee that they will never be excluded again.
But what sort of test will be applied?
It's very difficult to arrive at a test. Now, that's why quotas were just so repugnant. Many people felt that if you had to have so many numbers and you took the party and divided up by the components, that was just too stringent and it was too difficult, and in many instances you didn't have necessary flexibility. But what we're saying is that if there is a genuine attempt to bring in all of those people that make up the Democratic Party, that we will agree that this is sufficient to guarantee that there will be participation.
Are you personally satisfied that women will be represented at future conventions in numbers proportionate to their position in the electorate, or even similar to the numbers of the 1972 convention?
Not the 72 convention. From all indication, quotas, and of course we know that quotas guarantees participation, but it also caused so much difficulty and so much antagonism that I have to admit, we're not going to see as many women or as many minorities in this convention as we saw in 72. But what we hope is that with the affirmative action, in the next convention, you will make sure that women are encouraged to participate and you'll see more women, more minorities
brought
in.
Well, what happens in states like Wisconsin then, which have written quotas for women? They're forbidden to do so now?
Mandatory quotas, even this time, were not allowed. But there is provision to take into consideration various elements within the party. But mandatory quotas that prevent flexibility are not allowed at present.
Mr. Rowan?
Governor Sanford, isn't this whole business over affirmative action a reflection of that 72 debacle and a feeling on the part of party leaders that no Democrat can win if he doesn't have the support of labor bosses and machine politicians?
Well, that's not my opinion. I think that that's an important segment, at least the working person is an important segment of the American electorate. I don't think that this is an effort to appease any bosses, if there are such left. I think it's an effort to make this a broad-based party. I think it's an effort to make it a party that goes out of its way to invite people in and to encourage people to participate. And while there might have been some reluctance on the part of the people who think they might have profited by a more tightly controlled party apparatus, it's not really those people that we are worried about. We want to open up the party, and I suppose that some of them resisted it simply because they didn't want to see the party that open.
Well, now, it's well known that some AFL-CIO people and some regulars are going to Kansas City to try to strike out the implied quotas, to try to strike out naming the target groups of minorities, women, youth. Are you willing to grant them more in the way of a compromise than the so-called Mikulski compromise that already exists?
I would be willing to predict that the people that go with that objective will fail.
Do you think that if they do fail, and George Meany and Alexander Barkin remain unhappy, the Democratic Party can win? Can the Democrats win without their support?
I don't think the Democratic Party is dependent on any two men, nor do I think that those two men are likely to leave the Democratic Party over such a narrow issue.
Mr. Broder?
Mrs. Burke, if you're really opposed to quotas, then why are you and the others in the Black Caucus not willing to do as the AFL-CIO leadership asks, and specifically bar all kinds of quotas in the charter, and not just the mandatory quotas?
Well, first of all, I'm not saying that I am opposed to quotas. I think that sometimes when wrongs have been done over many years, that it takes some kind of a quota to make sure that you correct those ills. But I'm willing to say, in a spirit of compromise, and I think that this is a position that has been reflected by most of the blacks and also minorities and by women, that since quotas has become symbolic of exclusion, that the word quota should not be included, and that mandatory quotas should not be allowed. However, it just gets to be very difficult in some situations where we do see some delegations where there was just a total exclusion of participation by minorities. And there has to be some guidelines and there has to be some written directive. And I don't know exactly to what extent that AFL-CIO wants to eliminate all guidelines, but I think that they have come to a position that they recognize that you have to have some wording in the charter to give some guarantee of participation.
But if the midterm conference should decide to write into the charter a proviso that bars any kind of quota, mandatory or implied, what would your reaction be?
Well, the word quota, I think, is the use of an unfortunate term. I think that we have to be very specific as to how you go about participation. Quota, to me, has no meaning, no significant meaning whatsoever. But as long as there are words in that charter that will make sure that no one is excluded and that there is full participation, quotas, we know at this point, they've become so emotionally identified with the 72 convention, and it wasn't even required in the 72 convention, may I add that, that we see ourselves locked into conflict over something that means nothing.
Mr. Kiker?
Governor Sanford, I'd like to talk to you about another minority group who I think was unrepresented or not represented fairly enough in 72, and that's just the average Democrat who is not an activist in party affairs but just goes out and votes in presidential elections. We saw time and again when precinct caucuses were held in an effort to elect delegates at the lowest level, McGovern volunteers would flood into homes and small offices. They would control those caucuses, then the congressional caucuses. The result was we saw a convention in Miami where there were a lot of delegates representing Senator McGovern, a lot of young people, a lot of blacks, but a lot of delegates who didn't really represent the voter sentiment of the people who just stayed home, who didn't go out on those snowy nights, but who do go and vote. How will this charter represent that those people, and they're a minority, how will it guarantee that they will be properly represented on that convention floor in 76?
I don't think it will guarantee anything, and should not, I suppose, guarantee anything, but there is a provision, and that's the proportional representation provision. That means that if the young people or old people or any group flooded a precinct meeting and got 60% of the people and therefore controlled it absolutely as they did last time, that this time the 40% position has to be carried to the next level in the delegate selection process. Let's say it's the county level. And then those positions, by the time the precincts have come in, might have reversed. And if so, the 40% group there, or 30 or whatever, has to be carried forward to the next level, which might be the congressional district level. So those positions, minority positions at those lower levels being preserved, should do away with some of the abuses we observed last time.
All right, well, you're going to nominate a president in 2 short years from now. Who's going to decide what proper affirmative action is? Aren't we going to see floor fight after floor fight, challenge after challenge of state delegations the same way we did 2 years ago?
I hope not. Now, one thing the charter does not have that I had hoped we could have is a judicial process that decided in advance on the basis of the rules and regulations, the party law, who would sit and what challenges would be admitted or not admitted, so that we would not have, as we so often have had, a vote on the floor on the basis of who is voting for whom, not the merits of the case.
But can that be avoided?
To some extent. Had we written into the judicial council provision that an appeal could not be taken on these matters to the floor, then we would have eliminated it and we would have decided it on the rule of law. We have made a step in that direction, but haven't gone quite far enough, but at least we've made a step. Now, what will happen, and we already have been through a trial run, the state has to submit and has submitted for this Kansas City Conference to the Compliance Committee its affirmative action plan. Then a challenge is possible if a group within that state thinks after the fact that the plan was not followed. That comes back to the Compliance Committee. We've had every state turn in a plan that ultimately was approved. We've had a number of challenges from states. All of these have been heard by the Compliance Committee. All have been decided on the basis of the merits, I think. And so we at least are setting the pattern for a more orderly procedure.
Mr. Rowan?
Mrs. Burke, you're in touch with a lot of those blacks who will be going to Kansas City. If that Mikulski provision is significantly watered down, do you think any number of them might walk out again?
Well, I think there's always a real possibility that at any time the Democratic Party is not responsive to the needs and desires and to the full participation of minorities, that there's a danger that those minorities would walk out. But now, from everything that I have heard to date, There will be no watering down, substantially, of the Mikulski language. And our position that has been taken by a substantial number of blacks who are in leadership positions is that we support the Mikulski language, in particular 18A of that language. We do not necessarily support 18B. However, from everything that we gather, the language will be such that we certainly could live with it, and we would be sure that we would have participation.
Aren't blacks really in a position of weakness there because a lot of Democratic leaders figure they've got no place else to go?
Well, I don't think that's really true. The fact that the Democratic governors recognize the Mikulski language is very symbolic of what Democrats think today. Those are people who've just gone through elections, many of them. And today, those who are running for president and those who are running for significant offices throughout the nation recognize that the black vote makes the margin of difference. And blacks don't always go out to vote. They may not have any place to go in the Republican Party, but they often do not vote. And in many instances where they do not vote, we don't see elected those people who we should.
Ms. Means?
Governor, at the risk of changing the subject, you've had a presidential exploration committee for some time now. What have you found, and are you going to run?
I've been very careful not to answer that question until we got the charter out of the way, because I didn't want anybody shooting at the charter and trying to hit me. So I haven't answered it, but I would say that I will answer it very shortly after we get back from Kansas City, and all of my feeling now is positive.
Well, there's been some dispute whether the effect of the new campaign reform laws, with the restrictions on how much people can give and the proportionate way you run in the states. Now, do you think this makes it easier for candidates like yourself who are lesser known, or harder than in the past?
I think this makes it a more honest election and a more honest campaign, and I think it's a significant step forward to limit the amount of contributions and to tighten up on the method of reporting. I think it'll put everybody in the same boat as far as finances are concerned. I think you've got, are going to see, a new concept of how to go about raising campaign funds, and you're going to be reaching out for a great many more people. Once a person has given $1,000 to a candidate beginning next year, that's all. And the old process of going back over and over again to your old friends for a little more money each time is simply out. So a new way of spreading out the cost of campaigns simply has to be developed by candidates. I think this is very good, and I think it's fair to everybody, and more important, I think it's going to bring on better elections.
We have about 2 minutes. Mr. Kiker.
Mrs. Burke, I may be putting words in Governor Sanford's mouth, but I got the impression a few minutes ago that he said that, no, this charter will not guarantee a peaceful convention. To the contrary, that there could be chaos and floor fights and challenges. I'd like to ask you the same question. When the Democrats convene to nominate a presidential candidate in 2 years from now, who's going to decide what proper affirmative action is, and what do you foresee at that time?
Well, there will be a compliance committee that will be reviewing those affirmative action programs. Hopefully, we will be able to get affirmative action so that there will be no chaos. But, you know, don't underestimate the value of chaos. As long as you have an open party, I find that people remember a fight, and there's something that's kind of exciting and gives a new interest in politics, where there is not just a dull convention and not just a dull party, but bringing together a variety of people that no one believes can even sit in the same room. And when they come out of there united behind a candidate, that candidate has a good chance to win.
Mr. Broder?
Governor, there's a provision in the charter that allows the Democratic Party to regulate and restrict the number and participation in state presidential primaries. By what right can a national party tell the states what to do with their own presidential primary laws?
The only thing that it can do is attempt to be persuasive. From a lawyer's point of view, I thought that we were overstating the point, but that's the way the Charter Commission members wrote it. I think at most, the party could help bring some order out of the present nationwide chaos in primary elections, but that's all it could do.
About 30 seconds, Ms. Means.
Mrs. Burke, do you think that the new politics forces are weaker or stronger or any unchanged from 1972?
They're definitely weaker, but there's no question that there will be full representation.
I think our time is up in terms of having more time for another question. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mrs. Burt and Mr. Sanford, for being with us today on Meet the Press.